Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series.
Welcome back to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series. I'm Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb, and I'm with
Dr. Stephen Whitehead.
You know, I knew eventually I'd get you to do that. If I hesitated, I'd get you to say your own name.
Either
that or you rescued me from Alzheimer's again. And this episode 37, we've unintentionally picked up a chronological theme through the last few podcasts. And this is the one where we move from short trousers to long trousers. Yeah. So this is from the screenager years to the screaming 20s. But that doesn't work, does it? Because when you live in the tropics,
you're on short trousers all the time.
It's short trousers all the time. It's a sensible thing to wear.
Yeah.
Which is very strange, because I remember being in the 20s, and you'd never have caught me in short trousers.
Well, my father wouldn't let me, back to my dad again briefly, he wouldn't let me wear long trousers until I was about 15.
Really?
Yeah.
And that wasn't school uniform then?
That wasn't school uniform. I had to be in short trousers. Well, maybe not 15, but certainly, no, not 15, but certainly 12, 13. And I found that, I really hated that.
Yeah.
Until I was at school, really. I left school at 14. Until I left school at 14, I was always in short trousers. And I hated it. So I was really glad to get my first pair of jeans and long trousers and be like all my peers. But moving on to the 20s, we're looking at the 20s to 30s, that decade, aren't we?
Yeah,
today?
Yes.
Okay, well, for me, that decade is a fascinating one. And it's one that I've had probably the most experience of in terms of in teaching in universities. That age group, students at university, 19, 20 onwards, and those in the later 20s. I think these are the creative years. These are the years when you can start to make a difference. You can make a difference to the world. You can make a difference to your own life. You can make a difference to your own community. You have the energy. You hopefully got the health. And you've got the optimism, because you see these boundless years unfolding before you. And to think that you're going to be around on the earth another 60 years or more, then, you know, that's an awesome
thought. I want to add, you're indestructible.
You are indestructible.
In the 20s, you're indestructible. Yeah.
And you often see young 20-year-olds driving as if they're indestructible.
Yes.
As well. But I always like to think, well, go, you're not. But anyway. But you've got all that. You've got this creativity, this energy. You look at the pop scene. Look at all the talent that bursts forth in the late teens and through the 20s and matures. And often peters out by the time it gets to 35. You know, the best years have been in the 20s. But you haven't got that experience. You've got very little. You've got limited life experience. But the beauty is that you haven't got much experience, so you don't know what you can't do. In other words, you don't. You've got to find out. You don't know what the limits are. You've got to find the limits, test the limits, and that can be for many young people nowadays. That can begin at university. For others, it's going into work early on, or traveling around the world, just doing. Going out there and finding what is available to them.
When you're saying this, are you thinking of it's not gender biased? It's the same for women, and the same for male, and same for female.
Certainly, that hasn't been the case. Certainly, if the in the past, and we're talking maybe 50 years ago, the gender that was going around the world, the gender that was going to university, the gender that was going into work. The gender was predominantly being creative or being given the opportunity to be creative was men, males. Now that is changed. That has changed. It's clearly there are restrictions are placed on women, women's opportunities in many places in the world, Africa, the Middle East.
Still now.
Yes. Very, very severe and very damaging and very bad. But at the other parts of the world where there's more enlightenment and more liberal attitudes and more freedom to express oneself, regardless of your gender or sexuality, then there's no difference. And I think many women, women are going around the world, and I met them here in Thailand. You know, women going and traveling independently or with groups. They're learning, they're working, they do voluntary work, NGO work. They're going into the professions, they're going to university, supported by the family, surviving on financial support, but not enormous. But these are creative years when young people, men and women, are finding out what it is that they can and cannot do.
So that's encouraging. So the 20s then.
Yeah, I think
there's
so.
There's no differentiating between men and female as far as the excitement, the looking forward to, the exploring.
Well, one thing there shouldn't be, and two, there isn't. Increasingly, there isn't those in more enlightened communities, families, and societies. I mean, there are many, many examples where that's not happening, of course, where women are placed under severe restriction. But there shouldn't be any difference. And increasingly, women now are proving themselves to be adventurers, that they're being successful in careers, they're being successful in education. The big problem for the woman is that she's often got to, in her 20s, she's got to make some big decisions about the future. She might be in a big love relationship. She might also be following a very productive and rewarding career. If that love relationship has attached to it expectations of marriage and settling down and having kids and her dropping out of her career in order to support her husband, well, that can be a problem, and that's one of the big issues that needs to be negotiated very early on.
And you don't see that as a similar problem for males? Because nearly everything you just said,
yeah,
you could have put male there instead of female.
Well, you can, and I think if we've got men who are also in big love relationships, yeah,
and careers,
and they're thinking, well, if I settle, do I have to settle down and be a house husband, or can I go on and follow a career? If a man is asking himself those questions, I think that's very healthy. It's up to him and with his partner how those questions are answered. But it's a problem if the man's going into a relationship in his 20s expecting, well, I'm going to have my career, I'm in love with my partner, but whether that partner's male or female actually, but I'm in love with my partner, but they're going to have to follow me. The expectation that partner's going to be supportive of them, so the man's going to go off and do big things in the world of work while his wife or partner stays at home.
In an earlier podcast, didn't you mention that families were having children later now? So yeah, is the 20s becoming the childless years? I'm asking the question. Actually, the great thing about this is I can ask these out of ignorance because I don't know. So are the 20s becoming the years of the childless years?
Yeah, that's true. I think, not in every case, but I think the... as a general rule of thumb, and we're talking again about the developing worlds where there's better education system and more work opportunities, or that there has been hitherto until the latest, the enormous recession that we're in globally. But yeah, they're becoming the childless years. They're becoming the years that say where young people in the 20s are creative.
It's our years. We're going to have this decade of
that's right.
In our life.
That's right.
There's an element of selfishness
I
there.
Think
but
so.
But
yeah.
that can that's not bad.
No, it's not. And these young people are well equipped for this because they've often got over any dilemmas they had in puberty with regards to family relationships. The mum and dad are in their box. I don't mean necessarily physically, but they're in that mental box where they don't the daughter or son doesn't worry too much about them. They're going to get off and do their own thing.
There's mum and dads around the world, Stephen, who are just very, they're over the moon that you've just said they're in their mental box now.
Well, mum and dads, if you're in your 50s and you've got, 20-year-old...
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying.
You want that child to place you in a box and not forget you and not love you, but move on.
Yes.
And
get out of the house.
Yeah, get out of the house, ideally. But these 20-somethings, they've got all this opportunity. That itself can be daunting, of course, because opportunity is not equally spread across society. So you've got those who've gone to university, got a good education, or got moneyed families, or travel opportunities, or good connections. The opportunities for them are awesome in globalization. But you've also got millions who don't have any connection at all, who have none in employment or education or training. They're stuck in a rut and they've got very little opportunity. So big social divisions here, which we've got to be sensitive to at all times.
Yeah, that's a great health one, and I'm really pleased you've reminded us about that, because in these podcasts we do make some generalizations sometimes, which are... you know, it's always dangerous to make those generalizations, isn't it?
You can't talk openly about without making some generalizations, because you can't qualify every possible difference that operates across the human race. But there are, you know, obviously, clearly, there are those who are excluded from the world of work, they're excluded from the world of education, they're excluded from opportunity, and they're living either in very strong, religiously bounded social communities that don't, male and female, that restrict their movement and possibilities. That's a political battle to be fought, and I think any liberal-minded individuals who care about the emancipation of all people, regardless of the gender, sexuality, race, creed, religion, whatever, then that's a major task. Yes. When that carries on, and will carry on for centuries, it's not going to go away. But what we are seeing in the 21st century, which marks it from different from the 20th, is this emergence of as I've said before, you've got the growing middle class. The majority of the world's population is now middle class. And that cannot happen without you having women who are middle class. So we've got this 20-something that I've got in my head are represented in that group. They've got big challenges, of course. They've got demands on them to be successful. They can be successful, but they need opportunities. They need work opportunities. They need educational background. They can achieve great things, and many do. Yes. And they become role models for future generations.
Yes. I like to stay optimistic, and I'm going to stay optimistic and keep my rose-tinted glasses on and think of the age of 20 to 29 it's interesting. People talk about retirement as the golden years, but in many respects, the 20s could be the golden years.
Well, they can. I have to say they weren't for me. Although I was in a very stable marriage and my first child was born, it was a very hard time. And I was going through some very difficult situation in terms of career, starting a new job. I had a major health warning when I was in my late 20s. And although I was surrounded by love and affection and friendship groups and all that, and family, it was tough. I was working in the pub and restaurant business in the UK with my wife Rosemary, and we worked hard, and it wasn't easy. The other warning I would give to 20-somethings, and this is particularly aimed at women, is that they, to avoid, again, something in the book, to avoid this happy ever after trap, that, you know, they meet some man in their 20s or 21 or 22, maybe at university, and they believe that that's going to be it. It might be it for a while. It might be it for a couple of decades. Mostly, it's not going to be it for very long. But, you know, don't be seduced by the idea that, well, this is me settled for the rest of my life. I can now sit back. I've got my guy. I'm going to get married. I'm going to marry him. He's going to have a baby. We're going to have a baby pretty soon. And he's going to have a career as some successful lawyer or somebody in San Francisco. And off I go and live happily ever after. There may be couples who do that, but you and I know that that's not so likely. I would say, along with this, again, going back to sex, is experiment with your relationships and experiment sexually. You've got to find out what works for you sexually. You've got to discover your body. You've got a body, and it's likely until you've started to have very serious relationships, long-term sexual relationships, or had a number of sexual relationships, it's unlikely you're going to know what your body is or what it's capable of. And although the 20s are a time of vivid achievement of possibilities and the rest of it for many, I don't think it's till the 30s and 40s that the really woof years can take place, where your identity really firms up. So I think what's ironic is that you can be a creative 20-something-year-old without being particularly mature, without understanding life, and without experiencing, without valuing life and having the maturity to cope with life. But you can still be very successful, creative. But the identity-forming years.
So your definition of successful is that
from successful in what way?
I'm thinking. In successful, I mean that person realizing the possibilities of their potential, whether that be at work, whether it be in relationships, particularly, I think outside of relationships, in the public domain.
Yes.
I don't mean successful by making money, but I mean successful by, well, you want to be an artist, you want to be a singer, you want to be a dancer. You want to move up the corporate ladder. You want to be the next founder of the next Facebook, whatever that might be for you.
I'd like to be the next Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, whatever. Then I think the 20s are a time that it can be done. So don't pull any punches. Go out there and do it. Having said that, although Mark Zuckerberg, bless his socks, he's a rich man when he's created Facebook, I think he's still got some years in him left where he can develop and mature as a human being.
He's still in his 20s, right?
Well, exactly. In money's not going to make him mature. It'll make it's people like that are clever and you respect them for that. But as a man, he will still have a lot of growing to do. And Mark, if you're listening to this, you've probably got another 20 years before you reach a mature level, certainly another 10. But you're not, don't be hurt by that. You're no different from most men. Most men don't grow up and mature in their 20s. Women tend to develop, mature quicker. But even so, women, I think it's women in the 30s who have really gotten together this complex mix of sexual identity, gender identity, career, understanding culture and their own possibilities and reaching out and achieving something. The 20s are good. You've got the energy, that's the thing.
Yes.
And time's on your side at that point.
And actually, I think I like to think, when I think back to my own experience, I think I was very naive.
Oh,
I had no idea really what was going on. In fact, it was hormone driven. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah. We sit here and we reflect on this, and you bring the academic and the research elements into it. But to be really honest, when I was 20, there was no sort of pulling away from my body and analysing what I was up to. It was purely hormone driven and career driven, I think.
Well,
hormone and career.
Sure. You see, when you're under 20, if you're going from the ages of about 17 to 20 or 15 to 20, you're fighting for your independence. I'd say I gave the example, didn't I, last week? I was physically fighting my father, ended up in a punch up in the kitchen because otherwise I couldn't assert myself. He was, we've got into physical battles.
Mm.
Now, that's a very extreme model, and I wouldn't recommend that to everybody. But
I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. There are some people you'd recommend it to.
Yeah, okay, it worked for me at the time, I have to say.
Have a punch up with your dad. I wouldn't recommend it for anybody. Yeah. For everybody.
But I was, you're fighting, emotionally fighting for your independence.
Yes.
You want to reach a point where you can start to feel, well, this is me.
Yes.
I can be creative in my identity. And this is one of the themes of the Relationship Manifesto book. So up to about 20, you're fighting for your independence. By and large, you would hope you've got that independence by the time you get to 20, 21.
Yes.
It's there.
Yes.
If you want to leave home, you can do. If you want to go to university, you can do. If you want to get work, you can do. If you want to travel around the world, you can do. Your mum and dad can no longer say, you will do this.
Yes.
And if they are saying that to you and you're obeying them, that's your problem. Don't blame your mum and dad, because if they're still stuck in their mindset, that's their problem. Leave them in the mindset. You get off and go and live your life. So you've got the opportunity for independence in your 20s. So go out and do it.
Yes.
Risk, uncertainty. You're going to wonder what's next, where's my life going? But you've got, you've got the years, you've got the health, you've got the energy, you've got the optimism.
Yep.
That's the decade to go out and kick, what do the Yanks say? Kick butt or something, is it?
Right, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go out there and make a difference.
Yes.
And just find out, discover your own limits and push your own limits.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to go to university. It might mean traveling. Next week I go to Japan, and then I'm off to Taiwan. And one of the reasons I'm going to Taiwan is not to see my 37-year-old who lives full-time in Taipei, but to see my 18-year-old who's leaving the UK at 18, got an offer of university, he's finished his A-levels, And he's going to go and live in Taipei for at least for 12 months and may stay in Asia for the rest of his life. Who knows what he'll do?
Yes.
But that's his decision. It's not mine. He feels, okay, he's got a family network support out here, but he feels confident enough to be able to go and do it. He'll be supported with enough money to see him okay.
For a year. So this is like taking a gap year.
It's a gap year, but
I like the idea of gap years. Actually,
he's got to make it happen. He's got to make it work. He's going to have to study. He'll study Mandarin at Taiwan University for 6 months or so, part time. And if he can get settled into Southeast Asian culture, then who knows what comes next? I have to say, I've met some people out here over the years I've been living in Asia where they came out. There's one guy I think of particularly. He's now in his late 70s, and he's American. He came out when he was about 17, 18, and just lived out here. He became a very well-known academic, lived a long time in Cambodia, a long time in Thailand, and he's hardly ever gone back to the States. And he just came out here as a young person and made it happen. It's an adventure.
Yes.
Go for it.
Yes. Gap years, I have a lot of... I wonder if I went back and relived my life during that period, whether I'd say I wanted a gap year. But I must admit, I did a gap year, really, because as soon as I finished university, I got a 3-year job in Jamaica. So,
that's
that's my equivalent of a gap year, I think, with a safety net.
Yeah.
Because gap years don't have safety nets often,
no,
do they?
It's, no.
If you could go back to your when you were 20,
mm-hmm.
if you could go back to when you were 20, what would you change with the experience that you know now? Actually, I was going to say, and with the bank accounts you have now, but that might be a bit unfair, right? And unrealistic. It's I'd like to take my experience and the bank accounts back.
What would I change?
You wouldn't get married, I guess, as you were talking about earlier, because marriage was a way of
if
escape
it was
for
today.
You.
If it was today, no, yeah. I wouldn't. I wouldn't get married. I'd live with Rosemary. I wouldn't get married. I would I've got absolutely no regrets about any aspect of my life, and I've said that to people in the past and looked at me incredulously, saying, "Well, you must have some regrets." Well, I've hurt some people in the past that I do regret, and I apologize now profoundly to all of those people I ever did hurt. Wittingly or unwittingly. But the regrets.
So to those 17,084, my heart goes out to you.
No regrets. But if I was, I would be.
No, it wasn't like we talked about a gap year. Would you take a gap year?
Yeah, I would.
You didn't do that, did you?
I didn't go to university. You see, I went straight into work at 15.
So would you have travelled the world?
If I'd had the, I wish I'd have had the courage to do that.
Yeah, that's a good word to use, isn't it? Courage.
Yeah, I wish I'd had the courage.
Bit of courage to
Because although Rosemary and I were very strong relationship, and we had Gavin, what would be an alternative model? Well, one alternative model would be to go to university, and that didn't attract me at all. In when I was 18, I just wanted to work and get into business. But going to university would be one option. The other option today, of course, would be traveling, and I look at my son, Jay, who's 18, who's going to be out here in 10 days' time, beginning his adventure. And I'm rather envious of that. I think that's very special because he's got an older brother, he's got family, and he's got
connections. He has a support structure, doesn't he? He's not going to Taiwan as a complete...
No, he's not. But he'll be living on his own, on his own condo.
Yes.
He'll have to look after himself, and he'll have all the responsibility that goes with that. I said to him on Skype only a few weeks ago, I said, what are you expecting will happen when you come out here? And he said very clearly, he said, "Dad, I don't know what will happen. I just want to go with what will happen." And if he's got that attitude, he'll be okay, because good, bad or different, you flow with it. I certainly in my 20s, I hadn't learned how to flow. I was still trying to manage everything, you know, but of course that fails. But if you can find love and a partner along with you who can share that journey, that's wonderful. But don't necessarily imagine that it's going to be happy ever after. It's going to last, or needs to last.
So you do it. You do a gap year. You travel.
I would be, for me, from what I've learned, what traveling has taught me, what I've learned from being immersed in different cultures, I would travel.
Because there was a time earlier you said, I wish I'd, I can't remember whether it was on the podcast or not, you'd discovered Thailand earlier.
I would. I can't see how I wouldn't be drawn to Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
But that's in with the benefit of hindsight and experience of being out here. I've never been drawn to, say, South America. I don't have any desire to go there.
Yeah.
I like Canada, the America, North America, okay. Europe, I know pretty well.
Yeah.
Africa, I love Africa, though I know it's, you know, certainly East Africa. Been there a few times. But Asia, I think, is just, there's so much to learn out here for a Westerner.
Yeah.
You coming out, I think one of the things Jay will have to understand, he'll never be fully Asian. It, no matter, even if he learns Mandarin and speaks it fluently, he can never be Asian.
Yes.
He'll always be the Westerner here.
Yes.
For one thing, he's a good 9 inches taller than most of the others in the in the area.
Yes.
So he's got, he'll have that physical dimension. Wherever he goes, he'll look different. But he can learn a lot, and I think even if he goes back to the West at some point, future point, he goes back with this rich knowledge of other cultures, other ways of living, people, language. What more can there be?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? Travel broadens the mind, but it's true, isn't it?
It's one of the benefits of the globalization of the last 50 years, and I think we underestimate it. I know there's all this business about the environment and traveling and flying and all the rest of it, but yeah, I've never been an advocate of people being stuck in the community and not moving out of that community, feeling it's such a safe zone, they don't want to know what's even going on, you know, in the city down the road. And that's, I think, is dangerous, and I think it applies whether it's here in Thailand or whether it's, you know, it's in England. Getting out and traveling and meeting new people is the most enriching of experiences.
Yes.
When you look at what's the you know, £9,000 that people like Jay are going to have to pay if he goes back to the UK, £9,000 it'll cost him a year.
Oh, this is the university fees.
Fees. If he goes to university, and all that, what will be added on, the add-on costs of paying that back over a period of time, you're looking at a lot of money. It's one way, but there are other ways now.
Yeah. So when your son rings you up after being in Taiwan for a month, is Taipei, presumably?
Taipei, yeah.
When he's in Taipei for a month, he says, "Dad, I met a girl."
Yeah.
I met he's a girl and I've fallen in love with her.
Yeah.
Are you going to give fatherly advice?
Oh yeah, I mean, I will. We've talked about this, and I know he will tell me, and if this happens, and he talks to me about it,
he'll almost be in the 20s then, so it still fits in with the theme of this, this podcast.
He'll be in his 18.
Okay, we pretend he's in his 20s almost.
Yeah,
so,
I would.
So, Dad, I've met a girl and I'm falling in love with her, and I'm mesmerised.
Well, that's fine. The first thing is make sure you're using a condom. And if she's completely clean physically, then make sure she's on the pill. Protect yourself. You don't, you know, I'm very happy to be a grandfather, but I don't want it too quickly. It's protecting himself physically, protecting himself emotionally is more difficult. I think he's going to get hurt sometimes. If he falls in love with a Taiwanese girl, who's maybe a little bit younger or even older than him, then he's going to have to learn what that means in having a multicultural relationship. The confusions of interpretation with language, particularly in the romance area, you know, what it means to say, I want to be with you, or I love you, or even something as innocuous as say, I think I'd like to meet your mum and dad. I mean, that can be a big thing here. You're going to meet mum and dad, and mum and dad, you know, won't meet you. That's it's almost like equivalent, not quite, but almost equivalent to getting married. There's lots of big time with that, and so, you know, where it might not mean very much in the UK, it can mean a lot here. So that's the thing he's gonna have to learn.
Yeah, I have a friend who's just going through that. I talked to her about last week, and he's gone off to meet mum and dad in Thailand.
Yeah, I didn't realise, because when I first came out of Thailand, and I had a couple of friendships with Thai women, And I didn't realise they were always asking me to come meet their family. And now, of course, I know. So, no, I would. That would be one of the later events.
Stephen, you were a trophy boyfriend. You realise that, don't you?
Yeah, I know.
Here's my trophy boyfriend.
Yeah, my trophy boyfriend, yeah.
Are you going to give your son a copy of the Relationship Manifesto?
Well, yeah, I will. I certainly, my kids will all have it. And they've not read it. That's one thing. The book, you know, was almost finished, but I haven't sent them a copy. So I want them to read it, and I want them to understand the vows. I want them to recognise how important they are, and if they can say those vows in their own relationships, I'd be very pleased. Even if, I mean, I'm hoping that thousands of people around the world will benefit from the book. But it would be sad if thousands of people benefited around the world and my own family didn't. So it's obviously I want my own family to do so. Yeah. And really, as we've said, you know, the Relationship Manifesto, the podcast and the book, they're going to be around a long time. They're accessible for a long time. And not just my kids, but my grandkids and great-grandkids. Who knows how long this is, you know, this will be around. So you're leaving something that may be a bit of a legacy. Or they may just turn around in 50 years and say, wasn't that Dr. Stephen Whitehead, my great-great-grandfather, a bit of a nut? You know, it just, you know, off the wall. It was bizarre.
Stephen, they're already saying that.
Oh, they're already saying that. Well, that's
just
okay.
Too late. Just
it won't be the first and it won't be the last.
I actually think being a bit of a nut is refreshing.
Yeah.
I think being a little bit off the wall
is
exciting.
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because last night there were three of us. We had dinner. It was you, me, and Ali Taylor, who I'm doing the biography of, and I just looked at the three of us, and we're a bit eccentric, the three of us. We're not typical. We are adventurers. We're older phalanx. We've gone through particular journeys, and we're not living out our lives in some old folks' home in Chipping Sodbury, you know. Chipping Sodbury is a little village in the Cotswolds, for those who don't know.
Okay. And everybody's going to say, what's a Cotswold?
Cotswolds in England.
Where's the Cotswolds?
Yeah.
Sounds like a disease. Put the cream on and it'll go away.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, though, I do see myself as normal. Mm. Isn't that strange? Perceive myself as normal.
Yeah.
It's, but I don't want to talk about me. I've got through 37 episodes without talking about me.
We might drag you out later on. But I think it's... I think many of the people who do travel, I think they become not so much normal. It's, and, you know, people, listeners know I've got a problem with that word anyway, but they become different. They become differently sculptured as a consequence of their experiences and exposure to different cultures, different realities. You can't stay the same. You can't stay with limited imagination, limited expectations. You're forced.
I think you can, but you shouldn't.
If you travel in a box,
which is possible,
it is possible
to travel. We talked about we talked about the bubble in an earlier podcast.
That's right. If you travel in that bubble, then what's the point?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's one of the reasons why I think when young people come out here, if they do travel in a bubble, then they're going to go back, and what they've done, sun, sea, sand and sex, and what odds?
Yeah.
I mean, I know my son Jay won't be able to, because when he lands at Taipei Airport, he's going to have one night staying with me and his elder brother, and on the second day he's in his condo.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to spend that second night sleeping on his own.
Yes.
And in the morning he's going to have to make his own breakfast, and he's going to have to sort himself out. And at 18, that's going to be a challenge.
He's going to have to visit a Taiwanese... Taipei supermarket,
absolutely,
and buy his groceries,
and it,
where everything's labelled in Potomois, in Mandarin.
And you know, you even getting a taxi as a Westerner, getting a taxi in Taipei. I mean, it's bad enough in Bangkok, but in Taipei, you know, there's just very little English spoken. Yes. So he's going to have to learn that. But people survive. I've met many Westerners in Taipei and around Asia. And more Westerners are coming out here. They're going to Shanghai, they're going to the big cities, Hong Kong, Singapore, where the opportunities are, and doing very well. And I've met a lot of young people over the last few years who are doing this, are taking time out to work experience in the big corporations, the hotels, you know, the industries.
Yeah.
Wonderful experience, and I would recommend anybody do that who feels the adventure bug inside them.
You know, I've never reflected on it before, but in the 20s, when you don't have much money, and if you go travelling... Actually, not having much money is probably a golden lining because it forces you to to integrate and live with more. Whereas if you had infinite funds, you'd just put yourself into the local five-star resort and you'd be in your bubble. You'd be mollycoddled and moved around and in that bubble. Whereas not having much money
it's
quite a golden lining, isn't it?
It's a discipline, and I agree entirely. I don't think I don't want Jay to have too much money. I want him to have enough so he can get by. He's got to pay his condo. He's got to be able to travel. He's got to pay the university fees, which is not expensive. And he's got to go out and socialise. But if he meets some, as we said earlier, if he meets some delightful Taiwanese women, and I have to say the Taiwanese women are very, very beautiful. And the middle class Taiwanese women are educated and sophisticated, and they are lovely. And if he meets someone like that, and I'm almost absolutely certain he's going to, as long as he doesn't then get on the first private plane and fly to Bali for a long weekend, he hasn't got the money to do it. Now, if he did have the money to
Dad, can you send me another dollars so I can...
That's not going to happen. And he's got to work within his budget. He's learning disciplines which... he may or may not learn at university. The knowledge base, the skill base, the career work base, that will, I don't know where that will go. Yeah. But I think the other thing that we say, which we've not discussed too much on the last two podcasts, you don't know in your 18, 19, most people don't know what sort of careers, and I say that plurally, because 18-year-olds listen to this, don't expect to have just one career.
Yes.
The chances are you're going to have five or six.
Yes.
20-year-olds may be into their first career, but don't expect that to be the only one.
Yes.
So treat this as an adventure. You're moving from career to career, and you're building up a skill base that's transferable, hopefully, to the next career.
Yes.
My first career, if you'd asked me what would I wanted to be 18, 19, I would have been a drummer in a rock and roll band, no question.
Yeah.
And I was big into music and into bands, and that's what I wanted to be. I didn't have enough talent, and it never worked out for me, but I went down a different route, and that's been okay. But you just don't know where life's going to take you. Just flow with it.
Yeah. Actually, I think that might be a good place for us to stop, because you're saying, roll with it, enjoy it. I think that's for my own philosophy.
Yeah,
it goes on, lifelong learning.
Yeah,
it's enjoy every moment, whatever age you are.
Sure,
it's. I think my big regret at the age of a message in my head when I was 20.
Yeah,
and I don't know why it was there. It was just that I don't want to get sucked into the social expectations. Mm. I don't want to get sucked into the marriage. Mm. The mortgage, the wife, and the expectation that if I buy a provident fund, I subscribe in a provident fund, that when I'm 65, I'll start enjoying life. And that was strange, because that was, I don't know where it came from, that was in my head from my teens. And I think that's why I actually went, my first job, I was out of the UK. But that's, for me, that's been a lifelong guidance thing. And enjoy every minute, it's...
Well, I was the opposite. I wanted tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, ironic, isn't it? I'm writing the Relationship Manifesto now. And trying to disabuse people of the idea of tradition. But I was, 21, I wanted marriage. I got married. I wanted a child. I got a child. I
wanted a mortgage.
I wanted a mortgage. I had a mortgage.
Yeah. I didn't want it. It frightened the life out of me. I was frightened of that
Well,
model.
I think quite right.
I can remember it. I can remember being frightened.
It ended up, I wanted to escape all that eventually. And I did it through various stages, but I would say to people, if you had a choice, going off to Jamaica and teaching like you did, or going and getting the mortgage at 21, I'd go off to Jamaica, get the mortgage later, or don't get a mortgage at all.
That almost rhymed. We could have a little reggae song going here.
Maybe we could do that. I'd like to see you do that, Chris. Yeah, would be interesting.
This podcast like is denigrating. No, we're sinking, Stephen, into the lows. Oh, that could be the highs. Actually, we're right into the highs. God. Ladies and gentlemen, if we ever have a podcast where we both break out into song, that's the time to reach for the delete button.
Not until you've heard us, though.
No. Don't even wait for the song. And that might be a good place to stop, I think. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on that we should. Or good place to start.
I think that summarizes it. But you know, as I've said in other podcasts, at 20 years old, you're in it. You may be up to your neck in it, but don't forget, the best is yet to come.
Great quote to finish on. Ladies and gentlemen, our blog is at relationshipmanifesto.posterous.com, or search on Google for Relationship Manifesto, and we come right up the top there. And we'll see you again next week as we continue this chronological journey. We need to talk about whether it's going to be, you know.
Well, the benefit of doing it chronologically, we're getting our memory doesn't have to go back so far. We can do it more. If we do the 30s, then we do the 40s and 50s. Eventually, we're going to be where we are.
Which is the Alzheimer's, the Alzheimer's period. Yes. Okay, boys and girls. See you again next week. Have fun. Take care. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
This recording is part of a Relationship Manifesto podcast series with Chris Smith and Stephen Whitehead.